Okay, so this is Cheryl Paul, and I am so very happy and honored to be here with Rabbi Tirza Firestone, who is the rabbi for Neve Kodesh here in Boulder, and is truly, I've said this to you before, truly the rabbi that I've searched for my entire life. Mm-hmm. So it is really wonderful. I'm very excited to be here to hear your perspective on this very big topic of transitions that I find myself immersed in, that is my passion and my calling. So being a rabbi, if we can start with how Judaism approaches and honors transitions. You know, one of the things I love about Judaism is that there is such a deep honoring of transitions embedded into daily life, weekly life, monthly life, yearly life, whether we're talking about prayers for waking up in the morning, honoring that transition from sleep to wake, or going to bed at night, or Shabbat, or, you know, or life cycle transitions. I think that most religions do honor, but Judaism in particular seems to have a very special honoring of those transitions. So what are those transitions? And what is Judaism's perspective on them?
It's a great question, Cheryl. I think it's true. I think Judaism sees this journey here on earth as being one long process of metamorphoses, and we are constantly changing. And we want to be comfortable, and we want to enjoy our lives with the knowledge that we're constantly moving from one stage to another. And that is, like you said so well, it's celebrated every week as we go into Friday night and light the candles. And the two candles are standing next to each other with a space in between. It's like a doorway into the timeless. And then at the end of that 24-hour period, those two candles symbolically fold together. The doorway closes, and we light another candle, which is a braided candle, which is the Havdalah candle, or the candle of separation, where we're saying, okay, we just basked and bathed in 24 hours of freedom and no work and rest and play, and now we're going back into a time of work. I think every holiday has, in the Jewish cycle anyway, has some form of that, where we mark it with candle lighting at the beginning and some sort of goodbye at the end. Also a glass of wine at the beginning to make ourselves, help ourselves go into another state of mind, a little bit more relaxed and more jovial perhaps. And at the end there is either that braided candle, or there's some smelling spices, or some music. One thing that I love and I want to share about the honoring of the liminal space, the honoring of transitional space, is that on every door in a Jewish home, traditionally hung a mezuzah, and many Jewish homes still have that at their front door. It's a little box, and it could be artistic or very plain, but inside that box, it's hanging on the right-hand threshold of the lintel of your door. Inside is a little piece of parchment on which is written the central prayer of Judaism called the Shema, and that is a prayer that proclaims the oneness of all reality. And it's traditional, and where I grew up, in an Orthodox home, whenever you walked in the front door, you would kiss that little box. You'd reach up your right hand and just touch the little box, the little mezuzah, and you'd kiss it, kiss your hand. And that was a signal, I think a simple but profound symbol of, here I am crossing from the outside world to the inside world of my home. I'm making a transition. I'm shifting the gears of my psychic life from the public me into the private me, where I can let down my hair, so to speak, and I can relax, and I want to be mindful. It's a call to mindfulness in this transitional place. So as we go from room to room or go from the outside world into the inside world, we have that marker that, and when we touch it or when we notice it, we say, it's not really about I'm a Jew so much as it is, I believe that all of reality is one, is unified, is, and there are more internal spaces, there are holier spaces within that one. There are more external. In some areas of my life, I have to wear a persona. I have to wear a mask, and I'm not as safe. I have to be my outside person. And then when I'm here at home, I really want to be at my, you know, in my heart, and I can really let down. And so you could say that the mezuzah is a symbol of the markers that we have on our different passages in our lives too. So a girl that comes into her womanhood or a boy that comes into his manhood has a ceremony, which is like a mezuzah. It's like a marker between the childhood and the adulthood phases of the children's lives to mark, to kiss the, we're kissing the mezuzah on the doorpost. It's a symbolic, symbolically, to say, okay, we're calling God into this moment. We're calling mindfulness into this moment. I want to be fully conscious that my daughter is stopping to be a child anymore. She's entering her womanhood, and likewise, in a married couple, I'm no longer going to be single. I'm walking through this threshold. I'm going to be a married woman, and what's that all about? I need to get really mindful of how I'm changing.
That is so beautiful. Do you see in a tradition like Shabbat people's willingness to slow down? I mean, to me, Shabbat is the liminal day, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the fallow day. It's the day of regenerating and nourishing and really unplugging. And I write on my blog about my commitment that I made a few years ago to literally unplug my computer and not be online, not be plugged
yes.
in, not be checking email for a 24-hour period. And it's, you know, I'm always
beautiful.
Astonished at my resistance to doing that.
Yeah.
Because my mind always says, oh, but it's Saturday and my husband will have the kids and I'll be able to get work done and I'll be able, you know. And then I'm equally astonished by how truly regenerating it is. And almost the moment I unplug my computer from the wall and shut it down, close everything out, that I come into this different mind space, which is slower. And if I have to write something down, I get an actual pen with a paper, you know. You know, it takes a little bit longer, but it brings me into my body and into the moment and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and into natural time.
Yeah.
And I think it was Reb Zalman, I hope it was him, because I've quoted him on my blog a few times, that said that if everybody practiced some form of Shabbat, that it would be revolutionary.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on, you know, people move so quickly these days. And when I talk about transitions, I say you can't really move through a transition if you're moving at breakneck speed. You have to stop. You have to slow down, because it's only in that slow down space that you can feel your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about the importance of honoring some form of Sabbath, which allows somebody to drop down and recharge?
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to remember that it's not all or nothing. You know, I think a lot of people have discarded the idea of the Sabbath, of keeping Shabbat, because they think, well, I can't drive and I can't turn on lights and it's just too restrictive.
Right.
And
right.
And you want to rebel against that and just have fun and let loose. And that's also the purpose of Shabbat, is that we really relax and we come into our playfulness and back into our joy from being linear, and let our minds do other things. So I think it's always important to remember that we could just do a little bit, and that's good too, just
mm-hmm.
to bite-size the ritual and to take just a little piece of it and say that I am going to do something that I have not done all week. It might be gardening.
Mm-hmm.
It might be art. It might be writing a letter, contacting
mm-hmm.
a friend, picking up the telephone, letting yourself go into another modality of time
mm-hmm.
that's different, that's not as linear, that's not as straight and directive and product-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
and do one thing that's different. So if I didn't have time all week long to be in nature or to exercise, then that, then I do that. So something different, and Reb Zalman also shares that, that as long as we're doing things differently than we have during the week, that qualifies for making Shabbat.
That's really nice. That's, I'm sure, very liberating for
for
many people. And that's the where I came to in deciding what my personal ritual would be. It wouldn't be, you know, not turning on the lights or driving. That wouldn't make sense for my life. But it had to be just a commitment that I was going to make that did make sense for my life, you know, that would feel honoring of a different space. So, yeah, that's really beautiful. I like that, to just do something different that's nonlinear and non-productive. So I just want to switch gears for a second. One of my all-time favorite quotes about transitions comes from your book, With Roots in Heaven, and I quote it in my Conscious Motherhood e-course, actually, which is soon to be finished. So I'm just going to read it here. I was learning what every spiritual guide and clergy knows, that at transitional times of life, marked by life passages and important holidays, people come out of their shells for more light. And on a grander scale, at the universal life junctures such as marriage, birth, and death, people often express willingness to deepen their lives in ways that may have never interested them before. This is so because at these transitional times, our normal defenses are lifted and we are shown a more expanded way of being. So to me, that is transitions in a nutshell, and what I always try to impart to people that are in the letting go, the darkness, the death end of the transition, is that if you stay with it, it does transform into something alive and expanded, and the rebirth aspect, the rebirth stage. And it's very hard to know that when you are stuck in the underworld of letting go and grieving and dying, and, you know, literally dying to an entire identity and way of life, that there is an emergence of the butterfly on the other side. So can you just talk more about what you see in terms of people's willingness to deepen their lives during transition? What does that look like?
Sometimes we don't have a choice. Somebody in our lives is literally dying. We're making trips to the hospital. We're in crisis. Or there's a divorce going on and we're just overcome with pain. And, you know, I've heard people say that those are the times that they look back to all their lives, because there was no question that they were going to go through, that they had to go through it, and that their lives were directed, and that the crisis actually shaped their lives. They had to be in the darkness. Everything was prioritized. The world and all of its tolls and distractions fell away and during those times. And there was just everything got completely prioritized. It was all about life or death. It was all about survival. It was all about saving oneself. And those are very, very, very dark times, but they're also extremely precious. And I've heard, actually worked with people who, when they come through to the other side and then the world, they start waking back up to the world, they're almost sad because there's so many pulls and so many distractions and so many, all of a sudden, oh my gosh, well, there's so many things that need to be done, and it's not as clear anymore that there's only one thing to do. I think that those are blessed times, but they're also, nobody would wish that on themselves or anyone. These are our moments that shape us completely, and I've worked with many families, let's say in a lighter vein, who are going through weddings and bar mitzvahs or bat mitzvahs or other babies coming, that are there is a window. There is, like we said, there's a little window where people realize that life is numinous, life is beyond anything that's describable, that there's a mystery that's peering through, that there's light peering through. And during that, through that window, there is a huge opportunity to work with a family or to work with a couple or to work with oneself and to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Because things fall away. All the distractions
mm-hmm.
fall away, and everything gets that kind of prioritization
mm-hmm.
and that sense of there's only one thing going on right now, and that's this.
Right.
And, you know, that's the good side of stress.
Right.
And during that time, a family or a couple or a person, an individual, can make huge headway in their spiritual growth
mm-hmm.
Because it does happen that the door is closed, just like mm-hmm. the two candles, you know, of Shabbat. They melt down and the gate closes, and then it's business as usual, and we go back into our normal ego mode, which is mm-hmm. as it should be.
Right.
But there are those precious times, and I often find myself telling somebody who's lost a sister or a marriage or a, you know, have gone through a crisis or a tragedy, that they should, I don't necessarily say it like this, but that this is a precious time
mm-hmm.
that needs to be mindful, you know, we need to bring mindfulness to it, and almost to the point of savoring it, because
mm-hmm.
that's when we get such deep information about ourselves, and that's when we are in our hearts in a way that we're rarely ever at other times of our lives.
Yes, and, you know, I try to impart that when I'm working with people, primarily through the marriage transition, when they are in such darkness during what they thought would be the happiest time of their life, and
mm-hmm.
they're struggling with their deepest fears and deepest beliefs about love and marriage and commitment and their identity, and yet every single person who has stayed with it and worked it through says it was the most transformative and important time of my life, where I
mm-hmm.
learned so much about myself. You know, I mean, with across the board, without
mm-hmm.
exception, every single person says, you know, I learned how to go through a transition consciously, you
mm-hmm.
know, and I learned about my relationship to fear and anxiety and how to work
mm-hmm.
with that what-if mind for the first
yeah.
time in my life. So there is such a huge window. And it's so hard to believe that, I think, when you're in it, because it's so painful.
Right.
But, yes, I love the way you said it. I mean, all the distractions fall away. Everything's whittled down to essentials.
That's right.
So moving on to the big final question, which is, you know, our planet is in transition. So we have our transitions in our daily life, our weekly, our, you know, the big global transitions of marriage and babies and death. And now we're in this time of planetary global transition where so much is crumbling, you know, so much is falling apart, whether it's our economy or our environment or even, you know, on a somewhat smaller scale, I think so much of our education system and the dominant parenting models, there's so much that people are seeing as not working, you
yeah.
know, just not really serving the whole of humanity in a sustainable way and in a loving way. I'm so curious, from your perspective as a rabbi, as a spiritual leader, how you conceive of this time and how you work with people. I imagine people, you know, anyone who thinks about it, it's hard not to go to a place of hopelessness or despair or fear. You know, how do you think of it in a way that that makes sense and brings hope?
What a big question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I once heard a great rabbi say that Jews aren't allowed to lose hope after all we've been through, that after everything that we've seen in our history, there is no such thing as hopelessness.
Which makes me want to cry.
We're not allowed to go there. We're just not allowed to go there. And, you know, I always smile when I think of that, because we have seen death and destruction as a tribe
yes.
in our, you know, in our lineage again and again and again, and we've continuously metamorphosed and like a phoenix rising, come back in a different shape, in a different place in the world, in a different time, with different energy. And certainly we saw that after the 1940s and and we're seeing it again. And now we're looking, many of us in our tribe are looking at the bigger metamorphosis and the bigger transformation that's cutting across all tribes and all lineages. And we are being really pushed to the edge to get out of our small, narrow vantage points and see that this is really, it started in 1969 when the first shuttle took the pictures, the first pictures of planet Earth, and we saw there's no boundaries, there's no borders. And this is also true for the crisis that we're in right now. There's every tradition has its own world wisdom, its own deep medicine to share, and we're all in it together. And we all have to pool our wisdom now and share what we have. Every wisdom tradition on the earth has its own way. The only problem is that many people are still in denial and looking the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really that's a critical problem, because we all need to be seeing squarely and baldly that we're in trouble as life on this planet, and that our children are going to be suffering. It may not be you and me talking in our lifetimes, but it will be our children and their children who will really, life will be completely different for them if we don't wake up with resources changing. And I don't have to go into the particulars of that. So it's a very big thing in my life. It's a very big focus in my life. It's about waking up and doing that gently, and doing that in a way, both myself to stay awake as well as helping other people wake up to the preciousness of this world and the preciousness of this life, and knowing that each one of us has gifts, and each on an individual level as well as each of us of our traditions has special gifts. And for me, and you've already named one big one for the Jewish tradition, I think very strongly that we, as a Jewish people, have been given the gift of letting things rest. You wouldn't necessarily know that from us culturally, because we talk a lot and we are very busy and hyperactive. But in our very core texts is this idea that there's a rhythm in life, and that the seventh year of every cycle is a year where we let our earth go fallow. We don't plant for a whole year. We just eat. We eat off trees. We eat what's produced naturally, and we save away. But you let the earth rest, and you let the natural nutrients come back with that Shemitah year. And the seventh day of every week, we let our bodies rest. We let our minds rest. We let ourselves nap and walk aimlessly in the woods and go swimming without, you know, competing, and just doing fun things that are not, like we said, product-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this quality of letting things go back to nature, letting things go back to their natural rhythm, to their natural order, that is such a wisdom and such deep medicine. And I know that, you know, that every tradition has its answers now, if we would plumb them, and if we would pool them. That's really important. So there are some very great people in the world now who are getting together cross lineages and cross culturally to share what are the deep wisdom traditions of, you know, of mine, of yours, that we can sit together and we can pray together and meditate together to help ease this transition. But it's going to have to happen on very many fronts, both meditationally and spiritually, as well as educationally and scientifically and environmentally. Everyone is going to be pushed. And this is a truth, and it is we're in the middle of it already. We're in the beginning of it, and it'll be more and more as we go through the next years, I think.
So, well, that was very inspiring. And when you talk about that, the wisdom and the medicine of Judaism being in that ability to rest, or really in the the need to rest. To me, that also speaks to one of the great imbalances of our time, which is the masculine and the feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And that feminine, of course, having nothing to do with men versus women, but just the masculine principle and the feminine principle, and that principle of rest and regeneration and creativity and being, that's all the feminine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that if you're saying that we are in dire need of a resurgence of the feminine, that the masculine way certainly has its place of the linear and the competitive and productive and achievement, and that has its place and it has its need, but when it's out of balance to the other, which we are so out of balance and which I talk so much
mm-hmm.
about in my blog, is how can we slow back down, and
right.
come back into that natural rhythm of nature time or baby time. I mean, I see it even in new parents, the difficulty of following the baby's rhythm. They want to get back on the horse, get back
right.
to their old life, they're back to their pre-pregnant body, back to their work identity, that it's from the smallest life of baby to the grandest scale of our earth, that you see this difficulty in surrender to that
mm-hmm.
slower rhythm.
Mhm.
So yes. I guess just to follow up and conclude with that final point of how do you gently encourage people to wake up and take that time of rest and slow down? What does that look like for you in your life?
Mm. For me personally?
For the people
that I work
with. That you come into contact with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every person at their own readiness and at their own, in the ripeness of time. For some people, I will say just close your eyes for just a jot of time. It might be a half a minute, and give thanks when you wake up. Or before you go to sleep, jot down what was beautiful about your day. It could be something so brief as that.
Mm-hmm.
And for other people, it's 20 minutes of sitting in upright posture and in silence. And for other people, it's lying down for 10
mm-hmm.
minutes at a time to reset their metabolic rhythms and quiet their nervous system, just lying down horizontally. So everybody has their tricks, and depending on what our personality is like and depending on what our metabolism is like too, and our physical cycles, every person has their own way to do Shabbat. One thing that was very beautiful when I met Reb Zalman one of the first times, he looked at me and he said, "You need Shabbat every day." And I looked at him like, "What?" And he said, "No, you need Shabbat every day. I want you to take a little bit of Shabbat every day, even if it's
mm-hmm.
10 minutes. And that was really enormous for me. Like, oh, I mean, just like let go? He said, "Just let go." And so I took that on as a practice to maybe some days I would just lie down and rest, or I would read the funny papers, or I would
mm-hmm.
just put on a piece of music. Just do something beautiful. Just do something
mm-hmm.
beautiful. Connect with beauty every day,
mm-hmm.
and so that I would leave that thought with you too. Just
mm-hmm.
connect with beauty. There's so much beauty around us, and it's inside of us, and it's beyond us, and we can tune in and find that deep, deep medicine if we can stop the ordinary work
mm-hmm.
and just tune into beauty in some form.
Beautiful. Thank you, Tirtha. That's a great place to end. If you will hold on a minute, I'm going to stop the recording right now. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.